up the people too. I mess around. They're doing the mess around. They're doing the mess around. Everybody doing the mess around.
Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are... This is Eric.
And by the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex. Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is Drew.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen. And not a one of you is prepared for it.
And they're sometimes joined by guests like...
This is Dr. Wonders.
I had to stop her from screaming.
And Diane.
If you men only knew.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road. And, you know, anyway.
That was Ray Charles doing a message.
Happy Thanksgiving and welcome. This is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
And tonight we're going to talk about the Thanksgiving movie Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, 1987, directed by John Hughes of 16 Candles, Breakfast Club, Weird Science, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, and Uncle Buck fame.
I think you and I saw Uncle Buck together.
I don't think so, because I don't think I've ever seen an Uncle Buck.
Really?
Pretty sure.
I've seen it. I saw it in the theaters. Okay.
Yeah, I don't think it was with me.
It's not a terrible movie.
Yeah. I mean, I like John Candy. It's one of those things where I wouldn't go to a John Candy movie, but any movie John Candy is in is great. Kind of like Will Ferrell.
Okay.
Not so much with Will Ferrell?
Not so much with John Candy.
Oh, okay.
I find him funny a bit. I think, so I have never seen this movie before, apparently.
Oh, okay. But of course, you've heard reference to it forever.
Well, I think that was my problem with this, is I recognize parts of this movie as being ripped off like Seven Ways from Sunday. So that's part of it. And this is like an early version of Tommy Boy, if I remember correctly.
I have actually never seen Tommy Boy.
Which I found Tommy Boy, and I haven't seen Tommy Boy since probably I've seen it originally. And I remember that movie being much funnier than this. But again, maybe if I watched it today, I would have a different outcome. It wasn't a Thanksgiving movie, of course, but it has some of the same elements.
So Judge Jason is coming out strong with you're not liking this movie.
I had some issues with this movie, yeah.
Oh, excellent. See, to me, there's plenty of nostalgia that carries over some of the issues with the movie, but we'll talk about it. So yeah, okay. I'm delighted you've never seen this movie. Fantastic.
Yeah, it was a new experience, and, you know, it wasn't terrible. I don't think I'd watch it again. I don't regret having watched it, but, yeah, it's not something I'm going to own.
Okay, well, people, if you're expecting to just sit down and after, you know, when you have your turkey hangover and have eaten your pie and feel like you're going to go into a diabetic coma or just be super sick... But instead, you're listening to a podcast while you drift off to sleepity sleep town. No, it'll be fighting in the first 5 minutes.
I think, to be fair, we'd call it Slumber Town.
Okay, well, you were going to bed down in Slumber Town, but now get ready to rumble, because Jason hates this movie.
I didn't hate it.
Nope, hates this movie, thinks Steve Martin is a horrible actor, and frankly said John Candy would be better if he wasn't so goddamn gay.
I think it'd be better if John Candy wasn't so goddamn dead.
Well, yeah, but he was luckily alive for most of this movie.
Well, that's arguable.
Oh, well, okay. So, okay, are we ready to hit the plot?
Yeah.
All right. So... Neil Page, played by Steve Martin, is trying to return to his family for Thanksgiving in Chicago after being on a business trip in New York City. But he's held up. He's got tickets to get on an airplane, but he's held up by this advertising executive who just sits and looks at the three pictures to choose which one they're going to use for their ad. And he just keeps looking at these three pictures and not really making any decisions. And Steve Martin is going crazy inside because he just wants to get the whole thing done with and go home.
Yeah, the manager is staring at these pictures as if they're those 3D stereo pictures that he can't actually see.
And Steve Martin keeps looking at his expensive watch and is like, I have a plane to catch. I have a plane to catch. And finally, they're told, okay, well, we'll just table this and we'll pick it up after Thanksgiving. So Steve Martin is like, ugh, and runs out and says goodbye to his friend, but leaves his gloves in the office. Now, was that just a thread that never came back? I mean, I realize he had to wear gloves, like borrowed gloves, and that's where he finds the dog or whatever in the car, in the truck. But to me, those gloves seem like a bigger deal.
Yeah, I don't understand why it was a big deal. And why it was such a big deal, his coworker was going to bring them to him.
Exactly. The coworker is also going home to Chicago and going to hang out with him and his family.
Yeah. Was this like $1,000 pair of isotoner driving gloves?
They didn't establish that they were. So that makes it a little, you know. Anyway. So yeah. So there's a glove issue. Not quite as bad as like an OJ trial glove issue, but there is a glove issue in this movie.
I knew you were going to go the OJ route.
Well, I don't have I'm not a professional comedian. I just take the low hanging fruit, man. So Steve Martin gets out in the street trying to hail a cab. And that's where we have our first of several cameos. And who does he race with to get to a cab?
Kevin Bacon.
Yes. And actually he has that race, I think, because he tries to hail a cab, but he,
It appears that Kevin Bacon was just more footloose.
Oh, yes, he was. I'm sorry. Yeah. So, yeah, Kevin Bacon and he have this race. And Kevin Bacon had a weird
nose. You're not even going to acknowledge that pun.
I am going to. No. I'm going to give you another opportunity to slip it in. Anyway. So, anyway. Yeah. So, sorry. He is trying to hail a cab, but he's, as it says in Wikipedia, he's beaten to the punch by another man. A cameo appearance by Kevin Bacon. And why did he win the race?
Because he was more footloose than
Yes, Neil. He was. I believe he...
Also, the Bad Disco soundtrack.
Oh, yeah. It's a fairly bad soundtrack. I believe he kicked off his Sunday shoes and won. But Steve Martin ends up not getting that cab because he tripped over this trunk that was laying on the side of the road. And then Neil hails down another person, an attorney, we find out, who is getting into a cab, and Neil tries to bribe him to take the cab. And the attorney strikes a hard bargain, and when Neil finally agrees to pay like $75 for the cab, John Candy comes in from behind and drives away in it, or rides away in it. And Steve Martin runs after it, screaming that he'd stolen his cab. But, of course, this traveling salesman, John Candy, who plays the salesman's name is Del Griffith. And they meet again at the airport on a flight from JFK to O'Hare. And Neil has a first-class ticket, but he is bumped to coach class because of delays or whatever.
His seat is coach. Yeah, his seat is coach, even though he paid for a first-class fare. The seat itself was a coach seat.
Yes, and so he is not happy. And he is stuck next to, of course, Dell, who tries to talk his ear off.
I never did introduce myself. Dell Griffith, American Light and Fixture, Director of Sales, Shower Curtain Ring Division. I sell shower curtain rings. Best in the world. And you are?
Neil Page.
Neil Page. Pleased to meet you, Neil Page. So what do you do for a living, Neil Page?
Marketing.
Marketing. Super. Super. Fabulous. Isn't that nice?
Look, I don't want to be rude, but I'm not much of a conversationalist, and I'd really like to finish this article. A friend of mine wrote it, so...
Don't let me stand in your way. Please don't let me stand in your way. The last thing I want to be remembered as is an annoying blabbermouth. You know, nothing grinds my gears worse than some chowderhead who doesn't know when to keep his big trap shut. If you catch me running off of the mouth, just give me a poke in the chops.
Oh. Oh, that feels good. Oh, God, I'm telling you. My dogs are barking today. Oh. That feels better.
It turns out Neil is not a very likable guy.
No, he's the typical vacuous, self-centered, shallow, egotistical, cutthroat business dude. I mean, he really is just all about, like, I just have to get from point A to point B, and I don't want to talk to anybody in between.
Yes, and Dale is a salesman. In fact, he sells shower curtain rings.
Yeah.
And I love his little flip case for his samples. Like the little mini samples. Hilarious. So they end up getting to Wichita, diverted because of a blizzard. And
they're flying at the full moon, by the way.
And they are stuck in Wichita. And Neil doesn't want to believe it, but Dell says, oh no, we are stuck in Wichita. And who is the airport representative that comes out and tells us that all the flights have been stuck?
Ben Stein.
Ben Stein, yes. Who seems to actually have a lot of delight in telling people that all their planes are being canceled.
You expect them to say that, and then Nixon was innocent.
It's kind of hilarious. So actually, you would expect Neil to have a conversation with Ben Stein about Republican politics so that we can say that Neil is the uptight businessman who's also a Republican and a bad guy, that which would make Dell a Democrat and a good guy. But of course, this is not really that kind of movie.
No, but Dell is wonderful because he's just full of these terrible one-liners. And I'm always waiting for the next worst thing he's going to say. When he's on the plane and he pulls his shoes off. Oh, my dogs are barking today.
It's great. Well, just in the airport, it's hilarious that he's reading like an airport novelette kind of dirty magazine called The Mounted Canadian.
I saw that.
It's very funny.
But this movie, at this point, I have already figured out, is just the worst case scenario, one worst case scenario after another.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And Dell, I mean, to be fair, Neil is, he may be uptight and he may be a snob. But, you know, Dell is, he's everything you don't want in a person sitting next to you on any conveyance, really. I mean, he's a fat guy that smokes and talks too much and, you know, he would be the most annoying person to sit next to on a plane or a train or an automobile.
Yes, he's way too enthusiastically friendly for you not to want to reach over and strangle him to death.
Exactly.
I would murder him on a plane. I would just find something to wrap around and garrote him with.
Yeah, well, again, in a slightly different movie, Steve Martin would have tried, but he's not there quite yet.
Yeah.
But they end up, you know, of course, they're going to get back to Chicago any way they can before Thanksgiving. And of course, now it's a madcap buddy film where their meet cute was on the street with Kevin Bacon. And now they're a couple. And in fact, they're forced to share a room in a budget motel on the first night. And that's where we get the quote that I'm going to replace my earlier Steve Martin quote in the beginning of the episode with a quote from here where he says, and by the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's an idea, have a point. It makes so much more interesting for the listener.
Yeah. You glossed over, though, that was the one awesome taxi ride.
Oh, yeah. They were in, what was the name of the, I forget the name.
Was it Doodly?
No, Doobie.
Doobie.
Yeah. That was
it. It was like Doobie's Taxario.
Yes. It was fantastic.
It was just, I actually think I would enjoy that taxi.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, but I don't understand what it was doing in Wichita.
Well, again, it's just weirdness.
It's too non-white to be in Wichita.
Well, maybe.
Have you ever been to Wichita?
No, I've never been to Wichita.
Yeah. It's not a lot of diversity.
I understand now. So for all of our Wichitanians, Wichitanistas, Wichitanios. Kansans. Oh, Kansans.
Kansans.
No, Wichita. Yeah. Wichita. I have to call them something. You know,
Wichitonians.
Wichitonians. Yeah, maybe. Anyway,
we just spent way too much time on that.
No, it's okay. It's fine. No, I mean talking about no, a movie
they,
you hate.
They get to the hotel and you know it's Enya playing.
Oh yeah, and the hotel is great, and you know that's where Steve Martin just has his freak out
meltdown
and talks about the Chatty Cathy doll, which is pretty funny.
You know, everything is not an anecdote. You have to discriminate. You choose things that are funny or mildly amusing or interesting. You're a miracle. Your stories have none of that. They're not even amusing accidentally. Honey, I'd like you to meet Del Griffith. He's got some amusing anecdotes for you. Oh, and here's a gun so you can blow your brains out. You'll thank me for it. I could tolerate any insurance seminar. For days, I could sit there and listen to them go on and on with a big smile on my face. And I'd say, how can you stand it? And I'd say, because I've been with Del Griffith. I can take anything. And you know what they'd say? They'd say, I know what you mean. The shower curtain ring guy. Whoa. It's like going on a date with a Chatty Cathy doll. I expect you to have a little string on your chest, you know, that I pull out and have to snap back. Except I wouldn't pull it out and snap it back. You would. And by the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
That actually made me laugh out loud.
Oh, yeah.
That and the pillow scene.
Well, yes. But, and then, of course, Del has, you know, after the Chatty Cathy doll scene, which is hilarious, but also mean, you know, then Del comes back with, you know.
You want to hurt me? Go right ahead if it makes you feel any better. I'm an easy target. Yeah, you're right. I talk too much. I also listen too much. I could be a cold-hearted cynic like you. But I don't like to hurt people's feelings. Well, you think what you want about me. I'm not changing. I like me. My wife likes me. My customers like me. Because I'm the real article. What you see is what you get.
And that's when they end up, you know, they making up and end up sharing the bed. And they wake up the next morning and Del has rolled over and is spooning Neil.
Del.
Oh.
Oh. Why did you kiss my ear?
Why are you holding my hand?
Where's your other hand?
Between two pillows.
Those aren't pillows.
Ah! No! No! Oh! Oh! See that Bears game last week?
Yeah, hell of a game.
Hell of a game.
Bears got a great team this year.
Oh.
They're gonna go all the way.
Oh, yeah.
Those aren't pillows.
Yeah. Yeah. It was so funny. But during the night, their cash is all stolen by a cab burglar who broke into the motel room while they were sleeping, which is the scariest thing I can think of.
Well, and because he broke in, like, jimmying the lock with, like, a knife. Although, to be fair, it looks like the kind of door lock that we saw, like, growing up in other people's houses that you could just, like, push the knob and it would pop open on the other side.
Yes.
You know, the doorknobs that you would just push the doorknob in slightly to lock it?
Yes.
And if you jiggle the knob hard enough, it would pop out and unlock. But for the briefest of moments, I thought it was David Spade.
Oh, yeah. Well, it would have been funny, but I think he was a little bit too young at that time.
Well, it looked like a pretty young guy, but yeah. I mean,
it could have. So. I don't even know. Maybe it was David Spade. You know,
no,
what?
I looked
Let's
it
just
up.
Say it was David
it
Spade.
No, that would have made this better movie.
I don't know. We got some good things coming up, man.
Sure we do.
No, you're just, you know what? You just don't have a heart. You don't like holiday movies.
I love holiday movies.
Well, when
we haven't even reviewed yet Home for the Holidays.
Yeah, well, that comes tomorrow night in listener time.
Tomorrow night, your local time here.
Exactly. So, unless, of course, you listen to it much after we recorded it and released it, then it could be any time.
Or it should be suggested we record an episode in which we've already actually recorded.
Oh, I'm waiting to the time where we eventually do record an episode for a movie we did watch and forgotten we'd already done an episode for.
Oh, I'm very vigilant about checking that we haven't already done it.
Yeah, so.
That's how I knew what episode Rocky Horror Picture Show was. 47, by the way.
Oh, our mom. We joke that...
We keyed.
No, we joke that she's our most faithful listener. Evidently not. Love you, Mom.
Well, a part of me is glad she doesn't listen to all the episodes, because then I don't feel so bad at my fucking filthy mouth. So.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, or the blowjob talk or what have you.
Or what have you. Oh, by the way, giving a little wave to Connie, who is one of our more faithful listeners. I tried to encourage her to call in, but so far we have not provoked her wrath enough for her to call in.
What movie we need to get? Oh, God, I can't talk. We need to get her on another movie. What is a movie that she would like?
Oh, no. She's not going to. You're thinking of Diane.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, Diane wants Diane wants to do the movie Crash with us. The Sandra Bullock Crash, not the David Cronenberg Crash.
Sandra Bullock. I don't know that I've seen that movie. That's not the one with Danny Glover, is it?
Well, it wins the Academy Award that year. It was an ensemble cast. Had a bunch of people. It's about race relations, I think. Turns out it's not going to have Sandra Bullock. I know it's got
Sandra Bullock and Don Cheadle.
And
Tony Danza, Matt Dillon. Wow.
Oh yeah. No,
I haven't seen this movie.
Well, we'll have to get Di on the podcast and we'll record Crash because she has opinions.
Yeah, I'm down for that.
Well, I've got it. So soon you will too. We'll have to figure out a way to do it, but we'll get it done. Get her done. Let's see. Oh, we also have to do Seven Brides for Seven Brothers with Kathy.
Then we should follow it with Seven, except I can't watch Seven again.
Yeah. Well, okay. So yeah. Back to Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Back to our red. Okay, question for you. Actually, here, since we've veered off, we won't include this part in the podcast. But what do you think about putting actually like interstitial commercials from old time radio?
That'd be awesome.
Okay, cool. So I'll do that. Did I tell you? Did I forward along the guy who actually sent us positive feedback?
I saw the Facebook guy.
Yeah, the guy who said, as long as you don't start selling discount Ray-Bans, you're doing fine.
Yeah, I responded.
Oh, good. Okay, yeah. So,
I think I did anyway. I don't remember, but yeah, no, I saw the thing about Ray. It made me laugh because.
Oh, it's hilarious! Yeah,
Rain Man.
No, people are listening. That's all I'm saying. Not many, but they're valued. All of you are valued so much.
Oh, I have a lead for Antarctica, by the way.
Oh, sweet. Okay, they can be on the program if they can.
Oh, I didn't even think of that. I gotta write this down. That never occurred to me. I'm a dumbass.
What's another Antarctica movie besides The Thing?
I have no idea.
Yeah.
I thought The Thing was Arctic, not Antarctic.
No, it's Well, you know, that's a good question. I thought it was Antarctic, but it could have been Arctic. Yeah, I don't know. I think both poles look alike. Except the, you know, it turns out the Arctic doesn't have a big landmass like the Antarctic. Oh,
scientists in the Antarctic are confronted. So, Antarctic.
Yeah, that's the thing. There's like 24-hour science stations in Antarctica, but there's nothing in the Arctic that's like that. Partly because there's not a solid enough ice sheet up there, and there's controversy over who owns that area.
Yeah.
So, I read an interesting article on Slate, by the way, today, about how what's going on in Syria right now between us and the Russians and the rebels and the Syrians has lots of parallels to what happened just before World War I.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that we had a World War I means hopefully people will recognize not to, you know, that the dominoes, before the dominoes all fall together, what we can do, but we'll see.
Oh, sure, President Trump.
Yeah, well, we'll see. So, anywho, okay, so back to Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. So now we've gone, we're going to get to Chicago by train. So,
no, you missed the bus ride full of the bumpkins.
Oh, okay, yes.
Or is that after the train?
Hold on. I think you're right. I think the bus takes place first. Yeah, that's where they have the people making out in the seat next to them.
Yeah, and the whole Flintstones and Steve Martin tries to sing a song that nobody knows, but the Rubes know all the cartoon songs.
Yes, yes. Again, the class divide is vast. It's vast.
And repeatedly we see John Candy shoveling in the food.
Oh, yeah. No, he's a big fat guy.
Which is funny because, you know, they tell you, or I have been educated enough when I listen to other actors talk about food takes, nobody ever eats because you have to eat like 8,000 times for every single different camera angle. But John Candy is shoveling in the food every time you see him.
Oh, maybe he has a spit bucket.
Yeah, maybe. Doubtful.
Well, you know, he earned his weight like most of us do, honestly.
That's true.
You work up to it.
Clearly, he enjoyed and loved life and food.
Yes, he did. And he died in Durango, Mexico, the hometown of Lena. In fact, Lena's mom, I think either she had some sort of dealings with the film crew, because they were filming Wagons East.
Huh.
Yep, we visited the film set on Christmas.
Did he die while he was filming a movie?
Yes. In Mexico.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. Yep.
That's unfortunate.
Well, what do you do? Big fat guy. You don't see a lot of 90-year-old fat guys. Stuff to think about. Well. So, anyway. Well,
something to look forward to. Thanks.
Actually, you probably have a machine that'll tell you how old was John Candy when he died. Was he younger than both of us are?
Well, let's explore this for a moment. John Candy, not the RAF officer. He was aged 43 when he died.
Okay, so, yeah, that's what happens. Anyway, we get a bus. I guess the bus breaks down and they have to kind of walk. And
Train breaks.
No, yeah. You know what? I'm getting things messed up. Because they're picked up to go to the train by Owen and Owen's wife. Gus is Owen's boy. Or Owen is Gus's boy.
Right.
And it's a long, uncomfortable scene.
Unfortunately, it does us no good here.
Oh, never mind. Just get me to the train station and I'll take care of everything else.
Oh, I got that all covered. Gus's son's gonna pick us up.
This is not him, is it?
Gee, I hope not.
Are you Gus's son?
I'm Owen.
You the shower curtain fella?
Yeah. Yeah, Del Griffith.
How are you?
This is Neil Page from Chicago.
Hi.
Pleased to meet you both.
I'm to drive you to Wichita to catch a train?
Yeah, we'd appreciate it.
Train don't run out of Wichita.
Hmm?
Unless you're a hog or a cattle. People, train runs out of stub, Bill.
That'll be fine. That'll be just fine.
Leave it be. Get your lazy behind out here and put that trunk up in the back.
Oh, no, we've got it.
It's very heavy.
She don't mind. She's short and skinny, but she's strong. Her first baby come out sideways. She didn't scream or nothing.
Isn't that something? You're a real trooper.
It's very awkward.
It's kind of great, but it's very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And they get on the train and the locomotive breaks down. So they're stranded in a field in Missouri. So they get themselves to Jefferson City. And then Dell, in a very clever montage, sells his remaining shower curtain rings to buy bus tickets. But unfortunately, he doesn't tell Neil that the bus tickets are only valid to St. Louis. And by this time, they've discovered that they don't have any money. So Neil goes to get a rental car. And this is a great scene where Steve Martin gets on the shuttle to the lot way out across the highway from the airport and gets dropped off at the space where his rental car is supposed to be. And it's an empty space and the bus has already driven off and he's got to walk back to the airport across the highway.
Yeah, I had some problems with this scene, though.
How is that?
It's completely improbable. If there was no attendant on the lot to give him the keys, anybody could drive any car off the lot.
Well, did he not get the keys when he got from the ticket agent?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Maybe,
yeah. I'm thinking that must have been the case.
But it didn't look like he had any keys, and he didn't have the rental agreement, clearly. Because they had that wonderful Edie McClure interchange.
Yeah, no, he did have the rental agreement, but he in his fit, because he had a major spaz fit, he threw it away. He ripped it up. And yes, and that's where we get the great scene of he and Edie McClure talking about he wants a fucking car, and he wants it right fucking now.
You know I can't cook. Yeah. Well, I'll see you tomorrow then. Gobble, gobble. Oh, bye-bye. Welcome to Marathon. May I help you?
Yes.
How may I help you?
You can start by wiping that fucking dumbass smile off your rosy fucking cheeks. Then you can give me a fucking automobile, a fucking Datsun, a fucking Toyota, a fucking Mustang, a fucking Buick, 4 fucking wheels and a seat.
I really don't care for the way you're speaking to me.
And I really don't care for the way your company left me in the middle of fucking nowhere with fucking keys to a fucking car that isn't fucking there. And I really didn't care to fucking walk down a fucking highway and across a fucking runway. Get back here to have you smile at my fucking face. I want a fucking car right fucking now.
May I see your rental agreement?
I threw it away.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy, what?
You're fucked.
And it's a great setup because it's a lot of fucks in a row. This is in the time where you didn't say fucks at least that much. This was a well fucked.
No, and Edie, and you get to hear Edie McClure spout it. So
at the very end,
that's great.
Line. Yeah, yep.
Yeah,
yeah. So he's gonna hail a cab to Chicago, but apparently there's a physical cab dispatcher that is like. Literally standing and dispatching cabs from his standing position.
Like the gatekeeper.
Yes.
Gozer.
And Neil insults him. And that's when he gets punched out and then picked up by his nuts by the cab guy. But Dell arrives to save the day and he's rented his own car. It's a very stylish station wagon with fake wood side. And this is where you get the great scenes of them in the car together.
This terrible car.
Oh, it's a terrible car. It's sort of funny. You know, you got the bickering back and forth. And then, of course, the climax of it is the people on the other side of the highway saying you're going the wrong way.
Wants the race.
Sarah! Race? That's ridiculous.
All right, come on. Let's go. Let's go.
Put your window down!
You want something?
He's probably drunk.
You
You're going the wrong way!
What?
You're going the wrong way!
He says we're going the wrong way!
Oh, he's drunk! How would he know where we're going?
Yeah, how would he know? Thank you, thanks a lot. Terrific.
Thank you!
What a moron.
You're going in the wrong direction! You're going to kill somebody! You're going the wrong way!
What?
Why?
Yeah, and so it turns out they're going on the wrong way on the divided highway, and they have a harrowing scene where they get between two semis and then spin. And I thought it was actually really fun editing, because like when they're spinning, you see like what Steve Martin is a skeleton and John Candy is the devil.
It was pretty funny.
Yeah. And then they, you know, they eventually, you know, they survive, but they're along the side of the road and they're just happy to be alive. And they're sitting on the trunk that had fallen off the car and all the spinning. And behind them, the car catches on fire because Dell's cigarette that he flicked out the window gets sucked back in the rear window and lands in the back seat. And so that's when we find out that Neil had put his watch in the glove compartment, and so all of his cards...
His
wallet in the glove compartment, and all of his credit cards are melted. And they didn't have any cash to begin with. And he also finds out that... Because when Neil is having one of his freakouts, he's like, who would even rent you a car? You don't even have a credit card. And that's where Dell says, well, I kind of actually use your credit card. So it's like, yeah... So that's when they get to the hotel, and Neil is like, I want one room, and I have these credit cards. He pulls them out, little melted plastic messes, and he eventually...
little briquettes of credit cards.
Yes, and he eventually gives him, like, $12 and a watch?
I think it was, like, $17 and a watch.
Oh, there you go, yeah. But I love the scene after where Dell is like, well, hey, I need a room too. Guy's like, do you have $17 and a fancy watch? And that's where John Candy pulls off his Casio digital watch. He's like, look at this. And he's trying to sell it because he's a good salesman. But
yeah, like he's like Vanna style, Vanna White style, trying to like, here's the watch.
Oh, it's
watch it flow.
It's so great. Oops, sorry. It is really great.
At this point in the movie, I wrote down on my notepad, cell phones would have changed this movie.
Yep. Plus, you know, now with cell phones and internet ticketing and things, you wouldn't even need, you know, his wife could have secured him that plane ticket and he would have been fine. Or his wife could have rented the car for him. He would have been fine.
And did it seem to you that they kept flashing back to the wife as if she was having some kind of mental breakdown without him?
Yeah, the wife was creepy.
Yeah, I didn't get that. I mean, like, she was so like, he clearly isn't there a lot of the time anyway, so I don't know why she was so upset that he still wasn't there. It's just like, he's not home yet.
And she wasn't, like, demonstrably upset. Like, if she threw a fit herself and you got to experience a little bit of her character, you could kind of see how, oh, well, they both live like this because this is the life that they lead, you know, Neil and his wife. But instead, she just comes off looking like she's drugged, and you have no, yeah, you have no connection with her at all as an audience member.
Like, her Librium wore off.
Yeah, exactly. She's in a daze. She's the Walking Dead. Yep. So, of course, the car has been on fire, but they're still, you know, going to drive it. And so there's a scene where, you know, Neil's got a hotel room, but Del's sleeping in the car getting snowed on because, of course, the roof is all burned. And Neil eventually feels pity for him, invites him to in. And this is where they have their first bonding time, where they're drinking, I guess, from Del's collection of airline liquor bottles.
I wrote that this was the best mini bar I've ever seen.
Yeah, the Wikipedia says it's Del's collection, so because this didn't look like a hotel that would have a fancy mini bar setup. Plus, if they rented the room for $17 and a watch, they wouldn't have been given the key to the mini bar.
Yeah.
In fact, there's something in the hotel room that they can't use because it requires a key. I can't remember what it was. Like the TV or something.
I don't remember. Yeah. Anyway. I mean, he couldn't use the phone in the original.
Oh, the phone. That's what it was. Because there was a lock on that you couldn't turn the rotary dial.
Yeah, those were the days.
Yes. So, but they're driving this car home. But eventually they pulled over by a policeman. One.
Lenny.
Yes.
What's his face?
Michael McKean. Yep. So.
Although. There was no reason for a state trooper from another state to be there.
What do you mean? They were driving through Missouri or someplace on the way to Illinois, right?
Yeah, but not Minnesota.
Do you have to? Was it Minnesota?
I'm pretty sure it was a Minnesota state trooper.
Yeah, I have to do.
Having driven to St. Louis from St. Louis to Portland, I'm like, no, that. No.
Well, when you go north-south, you might end up veering a little bit, but I don't think you go into Michigan or Minnesota. I don't know. Interesting. Sadly, my geography is deficient in that area. It's all flyover country, or drive-around country, I suppose, for us. So, yeah, they eventually get back to Chicago in the back of a refrigerated truck. Are you there?
Yeah, sorry. I'm reading the. So yeah, and so this is on IMDb. So I feel better about my geography. When the two men are driving the burned out whole car, they appeared to be stopped by a Wisconsin state trooper. However, they're driving from St. Louis to Chicago. There would be no need to go through Wisconsin.
Ah, okay.
So I don't know. That must have been there must have been a joke in there somewhere.
Yeah, maybe that's what they had. In the wardrobe department, they had state trooper or highway patrolman uniforms from Wisconsin. They just called it good.
Yeah.
So they eventually make it back to Chicago in the back of a refrigerated truck, and they part ways at a CTA elevated train station. And while Neil is riding the train home, he has a little montage where he's piecing together some things that Del had said about his wife during the journey. And that's where he realizes that Del is probably not going home for the holiday. He'll be alone. So he returns to the train station, sees Del sitting by himself, and that's where we find out that Del doesn't have a home, and his wife died 8 years ago. And so Neil returns home to his family and introduces him to Del. And everybody's happy to see Del, even the creepy wife. Because it's like, there must have been more scenes about the wife or something, because she's standing at the stairs as if this is a big momentous event. But she doesn't hardly say two words, like, you must be Del.
There's some gravity to her performance, but it's inexplicable.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. But
she's overwrought is what I think the acting. She's acting as if she's overwrought. And, you know, she's like, say hello to Del. And she's just so like, hello, you know, it's like, it's crazy.
Yeah. Who is she, by the way?
But who is she? She's been in tons of stuff. Layla Robbins is her name. She's been in, I mean, I've seen her in all kinds of stuff. She's in Homeland. I've seen her on like Law and Order, and she's been in The Good Wife, and she's been in all kinds of stuff. I mean, she was I think she was the wife in The Book of Daniel, which I don't think nobody's ever seen. Ooh. By the way, spoilers, haha, which is weird at the end of the movie. I knew a third of the way through the movie that his wife was dead. I had already figured it out.
Well, in his big impassioned speech, he's like, I like me. My wife likes me. You know, that kind of stuff. Well, of course, he's got that picture of her, so.
Yeah, but he's a traveling salesman on the road who's a creepy guy, so it wouldn't be, you know, without the realm of possibility, he'd put a picture up by his bed, especially after he plopped some quarters in the vibrating bed device.
Just fun stuff there. Oh, and by the way, at the post-credit sequence, it goes to the executive who in the beginning of the film was debating pictures. He's at his Thanksgiving dinner at the table in the conference room, and he's still looking at the pictures.
Yeah.
So that's a fun post-credit scene. So why did you hate this movie so much? Why did you give it stars?
It was so clear. And again, I think because I didn't see this originally, and I've seen all of this done, I think, either better or I've seen it in repetition enough that it just didn't seem fresh or funny because I've seen it all before. And again, it may be because I've seen this movie out of order, but I'm also not a huge fan of the everything goes wrong comedy method because after a while, it's so unbelievable that it takes me out of the movie. I have a hard time with formulaic comedy movies that are so formulaic that I already know what's going to happen. Because you could predict what's going to happen at the beginning of the scene. You already know what's going to happen.
Well, yeah, and it's funny because I don't really mind formulaic thriller movies or formulaic horror movies. I mean, if they're extra clever, great. But even if I know where it's going, I guess still have fun along the ride. But you're right, with comedies, so much is riding on the element of surprise to make it funny that if you already know where it's going, you know, then you're watching like a romance or something.
Well, and being that I'm not the giganticist, I'm not the hugest John Candy fan to begin with, I think he was such an unlikable character on top of Steve Martin's unlikable character being on the opposite spectrum that this was just two unlikable people that didn't really make me laugh all that much.
So Brother Jay hates this movie and is not a Candy fan.
Nah. I'm a candy fan. Like I said, I didn't hate it. And again, I've seen John Candy in other movies and I don't think he's bad. This movie just didn't do it for me.
The candy fan can because he mixes it with lots of physical comedy and kind of absurd, but happy grin and makes the world laugh a little bit.
Wow.
Candy fan.
But like I said, Uncle Buck, you know, I liked Uncle Buck. Uncle Buck was a good movie.
Well, there's just a ton of John Candy movies that are just, he's just reliably, to me, he's just reliably funny. It's kind of like Dom DeLuise in a movie. It's not going to be a great movie, but it's going to make you, okay, know, smile.
The only Dom DeLuise movies I could identify are the Cannonball Run movies.
Well, of course, yes.
Was there not a Dom DeLuise movie about a pawn shop? Am I remembering that correctly?
Oh, I don't know. I know that celebrity chef Paul Prudhomme, who is also played by Dom DeLuise, or vice versa, just passed away this week.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yes. Pour one out for our homies. And he was actually pretty old. He did get to be an old fat guy.
Yeah, no, I've always loved Chef Prudhomme. I thought he was good stuff.
Yeah, he was the the pre-Emeril Emeril. Or maybe Emeril was almost like a parody of him.
Yeah, I would go with that.
Yeah. So anyway, So I enjoyed this movie. This is probably a movie that if I see it on TV, I'll probably watch it all the way through just because of fun memories. But you, not so much.
Yeah, not so much.
Well, it's okay. It's better. You know, sometimes it's better when we disagree.
Dom DeLuise, 1979, Hot Stuff. Three cops try to set up a sting by establishing their own fencing operation.
Oh, who else is in that movie? Because I remember it so much. Hot Stuff.
Suzanne Plachette, Jerry Reed, Ossie Davis.
Oh, we need to revisit Hot Stuff if it's available on streaming. Because that was one of those things that played a million times on multivisions. Like,
yeah,
Hot Stuff.
I want to say Dad really liked this movie.
I swear it was one of the shows where we saw it so many times.
I'm sure we've seen it 1,000 times, I'm sure.
That and the movie Whiffs and then like Little Darlings.
Oh, God. You know,
movies that are not great, but we saw a bunch of times because they were the only movies for that
Neighbors.
Month. Yes. Yes. That of course, that had a one. Rolling Stones angle to it that I'm sure our parents appreciated at the time.
I mean, I think now, I haven't seen Neighbors as an adult. I think I would understand it and think it were funnier now. As a child, I was just terrified by it.
Well, I, you know, you don't like John Candy, and I don't generally like Dan Aykroyd. Like, I don't, like, I like Eugene Levy. I like Rick Moranis. I don't really like Bill Murray.
I can't stand Rick Moranis.
Yeah, it's like, I don't really like Bill Murray, although he's a very good actor. I don't really like Dan Aykroyd, although he's been good and stuff. You know, I hate Martin Short. Hate.
What?
Oh, he just gives me the screaming willies.
I like Martin Short.
See, that's, I'm telling you, that's, yeah.
So he's your anti-Candy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's my John Candy. Yeah, I like nothing about his performances. I like nothing about his over-the-top characters. Maybe he's a very sweet man who cared a lot about his wife and just wants to make the world laugh, but I find him just repulsive.
Oh, yeah. I really dig him. I read his or listened to his autobiography and was very touched. So,
yeah, he just he's icky. Although I do like the fact that he killed that guy, or he made that plastic surgeon kill himself. Did you hear about that story?
No. Is that because he made fun of the plastic surgeon guy on Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt?
Exactly. And so the plastic surgery guy killed himself. And it's awesome. Well, what's that's the thing is because I'm the promote suicide, of course, especially during the holiday season, Thanksgiving when you're listening to this. But yeah, it's one of those things where the character was obviously just to mock one guy. Like it wasn't a stereotype. He was mocking this one man. And so, you know, yeah, that's kind of a problem. You take somebody who's already on the edge and you don't know it because you're not in their shoes, and then you push them and push them and push them. Yeah. So, yeah, that Martin Short, he's a killer.
Yeah. So, Yeah, this movie was
Yeah, well, tomorrow we'll be talking about, or at some future date for us, in our time, we'll be talking about.
In the past we will have talked about.
In both the future and the past, we'll be talking about Home for the Holidays, which is your favorite Thanksgiving movie. Okay,
I don't know of any other Thanksgiving movies, so it's easy to say that.
So, yeah, well.
I mean, I'm sure there are other Thanksgiving movies. So, you know. Rocky Horror Picture Show, you don't know quite if it's Thanksgiving or not.
Well, that's, you know, when Drew and I were talking about Halloween movies, one of our Halloween movies actually takes place at Easter, and the other Halloween movie takes place on Valentine's Day. But they're still horror movies, you know, so. Yeah.
So what is your favorite Thanksgiving memory of the family?
Oh, that's a good question.
I will volunteer that my most favorite Thanksgiving memory isn't necessarily even directly related to the Anderson Thanksgiving family as much as it was when we ended up with the Albrechts for Thanksgiving and went to the cattle company and got those terrible boot mugs.
Oh, yeah.
That we could then make the air bubbles with, and we drink, and we thought that was the funniest damn thing ever as little kids.
We had those boot mugs until well after Drew was an adult before we got rid of those boot mugs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and they've come back in vogue, by the way. That's one of my endearing memories, and it was kind of a sad Thanksgiving for me because we weren't with the folks. And to me, that's always been kind of Thanksgiving. But it was a different, and it was different and kind of fun. But having grown up in our household, it was a foreign concept to me to eat out for Thanksgiving. Like, we would go somewhere.
Oh, yeah. We would never go somewhere.
No, not for Thanksgiving. Ever. I mean, it just didn't happen. And so the concept, like, we're going out. I don't think any of us kids were prepared for that.
Okay.
At least I wasn't. I mean, but I remember, even Uncle George were there and Uncle Charlie was there. And, you know, it was a strange, but also, I mean, it was just that spending the night at the Albrecht's house and having those mugs that, you know, we were drinking soda out of all night long. And we're probably like sugared up, cracked up monkeys at that point.
Well, tell me this. I believe it was 1977. It was a holiday at our house. It was probably around Christmas, but it could have been Thanksgiving because, you know, it was wintertime. And I believe it was 1977, and it was Elvis in Concert, CBS special. And it was his third concert, or third and final TV special. Oh, maybe it was Aloha from Hawaii. Hold on. No, it had to be 1977, where we had, because it was Elvis concert on TV in the living room, and a log fell out of the fireplace, as it often did on holidays at the Anderson house, and it landed on somebody's long skirt.
Marianne.
Yeah, so
it got her. It caught. It got the sparks. Got Marianne's pantyhose on fire. Well, not on fire, but it sparked.
Yeah, and it melted our carpet that we had.
It melted the 70s multicolor synthetic carpet blend, which then got the razor knife treatment and water poured into the floor.
Yes. And so
from the clear Pyrex coffee mug that fit on our ceramic insert Gen Air stove. See how vivid my memory is of this?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. It had to have been one of those holidays, but
yeah. It was either Thanksgiving or Christmas, because it was wintertime, because there would have been no other fucking time in the house where Dad would have tolerated a fire.
Oh, yeah. No. And it was definitely a festive event.
It's too hot in here.
Yeah. So, yeah. And it was when we were still having events at the Anderson house. So it was.
Yeah.
And it was then, before the 80s, that's for sure. Because the 80s were a.
Yeah. Well, different time.
Yeah.
Well. That was the height of the slope years. And so mom was raising kids and Dad was working. And, you know, we were just kind of getting in the groove of things. But I do remember forevermore until they recarpeted the house, you know, we had that other rug that was over the ablated, gutted rug to cover up the slit in the carpet.
Oh, yes. Yep.
So For the rest of that carpet's life,
which would lived it lived just had this it lived a long long life. Yeah. And it has since been replaced by the cranberry carpet that's in there now, which will soon be replaced by some sort of laminate or hardwood.
Oh, are they going to do that to the whole house?
Yeah, like they need new furniture for the living room, but they have to wait because they want to figure out what they're going to do to the floor first.
Oh, please put laminate.
Oh, yeah. No, they will. Yeah.
Oh,
hey, their bathroom looks really great, by the way.
My house is coming along so well.
You mean the Anderson Family Trust house?
Yes.
We'll see about that. It'll be fun. Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on a new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts dial in already.